It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters and lore. East Coast Esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Days of Halloween.
How to kill movie monsters, movie villains. Supernatural ones, the Halloween ones, has been a debate that's been going around playgrounds and workplaces alike for as long as we have film. People have discussed it. How do we defeat these monstrous evil entities that are on the big screen? And to be honest, some of these have got some pretty embarrassing weaknesses. So I thought it'd be really interesting to actually take a moment to, salute horror films, because they're such a big part of the Halloween genre, really. Smart horror films find ways for such climactic showdowns between characters, you know, to take place right in front of you and just scare the pants off you. And these showdowns are built up to a level of intensity that keeps audiences guessing, nearly pleaded for an out on how to beat them. The best have a kernel of thematic relevance, too, bringing the story to a close while resonating with the subconscious ideas the film presents. So how do we beat these stars, shall we say, of movies? Well, why don't we start with Michael Myers? That's right. When Michael Myers is finally shot by nemesis Dr. Loomis at the end of the first Halloween, only to vanish moments later, it's not really a cliffhanger. The film ends with shots of areas of the sleepy suburb of Halloween where evil may reside, driving home the point that evil is everywhere, no matter how we try to defeat it. This coincided with the end of the Vietnam War and the Nixon administration. There was no ending, really. But horror films can get lazy, treating their killers like big bads of video games. All you have to do is hit the right spot on the monster's body, and you're the victor. So here are some of the most embarrassing. Jason Voorhees is the first guy we're going to take out. Jason Voorhees probably needs some therapy. He's a crazy killer. His mother was very protective of her younger son during his early days as well, particularly due to his deformities, to which other children in the 1950s weren't exactly politically correct about. With a few camp counselors meant to oversee the young boy snuck off for Nookie, he supposedly drowned tragically. Alas, he did survive in the wilderness, only to witness a counselor's decapitate his only ally in the first film. From then on, Jason has been on a rampage that has taken him from Crystal Lake to New York City, which was actually filmed in Toronto, by the way, all the way to space. His relationship to water since his apparent drowning has been one of the most inconsistent aspects of the franchise, but in Freddy vs. Jason, the dream demon realizes that deep down the machete-wielding maniac really is just a big aquaphobe at heart. That doesn't stop him from rising from the water with Freddy's head in his hand by the film's end. But who really watches Friday the 13th for the narrative anyhow? So there you go. Jason Voorhees, bust out the water. And Krueger, Freddy Krueger to be exact, he just wants to scare you. In 84, Wes Craven unleashed his deepest fears on unsuspecting audiences. The specter of a horribly burned demon ghost with the ability to inflict mortal damage to people in their dreams. Freddy Krueger, before that, he became a one-liner spewing self-parody. He was a truly scary thought, inspired by stories of survivors of the Khmer Rouge massacre who died in their sleep. But heroine Nancy Thompson realizes by the end of the first film that Freddy is very much like those guys with live chainsaws at haunted houses. They're there to collect a paycheck and contractually can't make any physical contact with you. Essentially, if Freddy Krueger can hurt you, you probably signed a dream waiver. So Nancy refuses to be afraid of him. Pretty simple, right? Simply turning her back and making him vanish into the ether. Without the power of fear, he's just a guy in a corny costume. Had New Line Cinema not smelled franchise bait, the film would have been bookended with a satisfactory happy ending, and A Nightmare on Elm Street would have been just that. One nightmare, not multiple. And, Freddy Krueger's visage, still probably one of the creepiest things you'll ever see. I still think he's terrifying. Okay, let's move on to Jaws. Oh my God. No movie monster has been destroyed more than Jaws. But ultimately, Jaws is just an animal without rhyme or reason, indiscriminately picking off bathers and bathers and swimmers. He does, however, have a nasty habit of foreshadowing his own doom in each and every single entry, with the exception of the fourth. In the first, not only does Chief Brody see an image of a shark with a scuba tank in its mouth, but it freely swims with one dangling out, just waiting to be shot. Part 2 reveals that the lake is surrounded by underwater electrical lines, which the shark gladly tries to take a bite of. And in Part 3, he manages to kill a show-off pre-reality TV shark hunter, but not swallow him. Rather, he lets him dangle in his gullet, a grenade-filled hand dangling in reach of the main characters. Lovely. The fourth film depends on which version you see, as both have impaled by the mass of the boat ending. But whether he randomly explodes depends on the version you get. It's an anomaly, honestly. And kind of one of the cool things about film. Got mummy trouble? Well, apparently they're scared of the cats. There was always the ward off cats. Apparently it is a part of their folklore and culture over there. If you're not with this idea, stick to Egyptian folk, where the mummy is a classic Illyriophobe. His fear of cats is so strong that just holding one in his direction will send him shrieking out of the room. Yeah, real scary, considering I have two. Okay. Dracula may be enticing, but you can take him out in his sleep. Boy, bet you heard about this one. It's hard to pick a favorite Dracula. So many great actors, from Lugosi to Jack Palance, have taken on the role with various success. The writer's personal favorite of this article, Christopher Lee, played the role of Hammer Productions for decades and always brought gravitas, empathy, and an eerie charisma to the legendary vampire. But as author Bram Stoker wrote him, Dracula has numerous weaknesses, the easiest and most exploitable being direct exposure to sunlight. However, in many films, he slumbers in a coffin during the daylight hours, awaking at nightfall only to feed. And in many films, it appears Dracula is on some heavy-duty Ambien, because even after a protagonist uncovers coffin, not even the racket they make on nailing it or on sealing with hammers and stakes doesn't appear to wake him from this sleep. When they finally get it open, he's still in peaceful rest. And then, boom, wooden stake through the heart. Done. Destroyed, dead, no more Dracula. So there you go. Oh, man. One of the creepiest things is that Ring girl. Well, the movie was called Ringu in Japan, but you know the movie, The Ring, where the little girl comes out of the well. Oh, my God. But alas, it turns out the young girl is, you know, a little bit psychic. She has psychic abilities she could not control and was abandoned and tortured, leaving her soul embedded in the strips of the tape. That's why she's on the tape. That's why she's on the video. So you better not watch it. The only way to survive a screening of the film is to make a duplicate copy and pass it on. One could do as vengeance, giving it to someone they dislike. Or they could simply slip a copy of it at a video store in place of a copy. Oh, boy. Yeah, thanks. But her, Samara, the evil girl, is embedded in an outdated format, and it's much more difficult to bootleg Blu-rays. Most people don't even own VHS players anymore, rendering her largely obsolete. So there you go. Progress itself has saved us from the evil Samara. Sorry, Ring Girl. You're just not going to DVD. Okay, one of my favorite movies of all time for Halloween, and Christmas too, is Gremlins. The Gremlins of the two Joe Dante films turn into more of a nuisance by the sequel than any real threat, which makes sense given that the director essentially intended for the film to be a live-action Looney Tunes cartoon. In the first, however, they present a real threat, overtaking a small town, sabotaging a stair chair to kill an old lady, and firing guns, not to mention the number of traffic incidents they incite and murders. But they're rule-specific monsters, though, something the underrated sequel has the courage to mock. And those rules make them especially vulnerable. The key is sunlight, which ultimately kills them like vampires. However, any bright light will at least hold them off from imminent attack for a while. All one needs is a fairly powerful industrial flashlight, and then they're clear until dawn. These aren't creatures who, like vampires, have crypts or coves to hide in about during the day. They're also equally vulnerable to things that could kill anyone, or things including swords, apparently blenders, because I remember Part 2, fire, microwaves, and guns. Just avoid using super soakers, because, you know, that's how they spread. So there you have it, guys. Ways to kill famous movie monsters. I hope this will help you sleep a little better at night after you movie binge all your awesome movies this Halloween. Don't forget, guys, to like and subscribe to the episode. And I hope you're enjoying 31 Days of Halloween, the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Halloween special. Take care, and you'll hear from me again tomorrow. Bye-bye now.